16-1. The next public hearing is a violation of landlord's liability ordinance at 419 Fifth Avenue South. We're about 10 minutes behind schedule, not too bad. Excuse me, 15 minutes behind schedule. I know there are a number of people that are here for the last item on the agenda. And just to give you an idea where this might fall, I had optimistically told some people it'd be 8:30. It's highly unlikely that'll be that early this evening. Mr. Gustafson.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the council. I think I can shorten things up a bit because the property owner at 419 Fifth Avenue South has today told me that he's going to stipulate to certain items before the council. Mr. Anderson, Dennis Anderson, is here, and he's agreeing to stipulate that for purposes of the action the council is looking at tonight, he will stipulate that he is the owner of the property at 419 Fifth Avenue South. He will also stipulate to the three violations that were in question as having occurred, and those would have been violations that occurred on September 5th, 1989, December 23rd, 1989, and July 21st, 1990. In the council packet on September 17th, I believe it was, I had addressed a memorandum to the council, in short, telling what the findings of the board had been and the recommendation to the council had been, and that Mr. Anderson had timely perfected an appeal. Just briefly on this particular issue.
Hi, my name is Mike Peterson, and I've lived in St. Cloud most of my life. In 1985, I attended VOTEC, summer of 85. I went to cooking class. I had attended there about 2 months and became dissatisfied with what I was learning or what I wasn't learning. At the same time, I was working for the Americana Inn of St. Cloud. I had been a cook. Okay. Being not satisfied with what I was learning at VOTEC, I went to the head of the school and talked to him and told him my problem. There were several other students that were not satisfied also. I didn't feel the teachers were doing their job, or that the class was teaching me what I wanted to learn. They said that I could quit, but I wouldn't get my tuition back. I ended up going to the head of District 742 and finally did end up getting my tuition back. The two teachers of the VOTEC cooking class, Mr. Brewster and Mr. Costello, called the owner of the Americana Inn and told him that if he didn't fire me, that they would spread it throughout town that I was gay and that I had AIDS. The next day I was fired from my job. And I was told by the person who fired me that this was the reason I was fired. And that was in November 85. I went to a local attorney and he did some paperwork, he did some calling, and he did get me my job back. I didn't stay with the job because after that there was a lot of harassment. And basically what it's done is it's ruined a career that I've worked at for a long time, a cooking career, because of my fear of something like this happening again. That's it.
Are you involved at all now as a chef, or?
No, I'm not.
No. So you've completely changed?
Yes.
Careers. Are there other questions?
What did your attorney tell you about your rights at that time?
He told me that if I pursued the case, I probably had a good case. He said since it was a threat as far as a rumor and not actually an accusation, that it would be a long, drawn-out case, and he suggested that I just take my job back and back pay. And that's what I did.
Did you get any support from the community here when this happened to you? And also, could you comment a little bit on what it's been like now, 5 years later, living here in a context, and I'm not saying it'd be different in hardly any other city, but you know, in a context where there isn't much that can be done to redress that.
Okay, I really wasn't out to the community. I'm still not really out to the community, so I didn't look for support from the gay community.
I meant the community at large, the city, the people here.
I think my attorney kind of kind of wiped it under the rug. I think I should have pursued it. At that time, I was still planning on pursuing a cooking career, so I didn't want I didn't want a lot of publicity. Since that, I've had several cooking jobs and have not stayed with them because I don't see a career in them. Because if somebody can wipe out my career that easily by threatening to tell somebody who I am, then it's not a career that I can pursue.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maxine Barnett Sermely.
I'm short. My name is Maxine Barnett Sermely, and I talked about a few of these things this afternoon, but I wanted to piggyback on some of them. Earlier this afternoon, we talked about, and I think you got a clearer understanding, I work at a battered women's shelter, of the fact that often it is leveled, and I see part of this, the goal here is to try to get community attitudes, and so that's kind of what I'm talking about here. That if a woman comes to the shelter, she's going over there to associate with these lesbians. Said very negatively, okay? That those, you will go over there and you will learn to hate men and you will be associating with these lesbians. I want to piggyback something on that too that I think is remains a problem for us in terms of our dealing with our own homophobia in the shelter, and that is that with that kind of attitude coming from the community, we continue to put out in our newsletter and information that we do, in fact, serve lesbian women in battering relationships. But you see, we're almost reinforcing the idea that this is an okay place for lesbian people to come and be and whatever, and it's largely due to the negative community attitude that we see. Another thing that I wanted to comment on is that several years ago I was working with some people in the community to do some talking to parents of junior high and high school kids throughout their different religious affiliations that have youth groups at different churches about the fact that parents need to know what a child struggling with this issue might be experiencing. With the rate of teenage suicide in our society, it's criminal not to be addressing the struggle that young people face, especially if one of those issues is affectional preference. The community response within particular denominations, and it doesn't even matter if I go into which ones or not, is tremendously negative. For the most part, people didn't want to hear about that. That's not a problem that children should be talking about. If you talk about it, then they'll become one. Then you're going to raise the question. Okay, so it really got nowhere. A couple of years ago, and we talked about this a little bit this afternoon, I wrote a letter to the newspaper in defense of Bill Dorn. And what he what was experiencing and what I was experiencing through that. I received two phone calls just full of vulgarities and name-calling, etc. But nothing compared to what he received and the threats and the obscenities and the abuse from this community. I have friends who wouldn't dare to think about coming out in the community. They would lose their jobs in an instant, nor could they risk coming here tonight. I have encouraged them to include their remarks to you in writing. So I guess I still strongly want to push, lobby, do whatever I can that affectional preference be included in the state human rights ordinances. I just think as a city, I don't see how we're going to make it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
Are there questions? Thank you very much. Jane Allren? Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
And I'm taller, so I'm going to raise it up again. My name is Jane Olson. I'm the director of the Women's Center at St. Cloud State. I thank the committee for holding a hearing in St. Cloud, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. Officially, I'm here representing the Women's Center, but I'm also representing myself as a concerned citizen. So I guess I'm playing two roles tonight. Where to start? I had a real hard time keeping it to 3 to 5 minutes, so I'll try, and you can kind of do this if you need to cut me off. Discrimination, intimidation, and harassment towards lesbians and gays is very widespread at SCSU and in the St. Cloud community. I have seen examples myself of name-calling, defaced posters, and I brought a few examples with me, and lesbian baiting. In the community as well as on campus, I've also witnessed denigrating remarks and jokes about lesbian and gay men. A few examples. Women's Center posters announcing the 1990 Women's History Month activities were defaced on campus. I brought one with me. That's one example. Another one I heard recently is someone saying, "What are you, a bunch of lesbians?" to women that were using the Women's Center. And I think the most tragic is that some lesbians in St. Cloud and the surrounding community do not even feel safe enough to leave first names and phone numbers as they reach out to the Women's Center for information. Two calls in particular remain in my memory. Both of them were this summer. Both women called for information about Lambda, the gay, lesbian, and student organization. There were no representatives available and probably wouldn't be for a while. I didn't have the information they needed. I asked them if I could have their first names and numbers and call them back. They both said no way and hung up and did this very, very quickly. It was a powerful reminder to me that we live in a society that requires lesbians and gay men to hide and to be invisible in order to be safe. Again, these callers were calling the Women's Center on a campus and could not leave a first name or phone number. The Women's Center is working to serve a diverse population of women, women of color, non-traditional women, and lesbians. Lambda has moved their office into the Women's Center. I'm really delighted about that, and we look forward to collaborating with them on a variety of projects. Through my work at the Women's Center and also in some of my personal relationships, I've talked with many lesbians who have not publicly come out because the risks are too great at this time. They rightfully fear loss of jobs, their children, family relationships, housing, and their future careers. They have been effectively silenced and their humanity ignored. Homophobia and heterosexism hurt all women. Our patriarchal society has created powerful negative messages about lesbians and gay men. These messages serve to keep all women silent, in line, and male defined. For fear of being labeled as a lesbian, any rebellious, assertive, nonconformist act is suspect in our society. And many women understand what they have to lose if society perceives them as a lesbian. So the threat of this label keeps women, whether lesbian or heterosexual, from being free in our society. I have a whole list of things that we as a community, and I think leaders in the state can do, which is why I wrote it all down. Number one, I think collectively we can lobby at the local, state, and federal levels for strong anti-discrimination laws. Number two, and I think several people spoke to this, we can enforce the laws. Number three, we can hold perpetrators of hate crimes responsible. Four, fund programs that support and aid lesbians and gay men. And five, ensure that lesbians and gay men are represented on state commission boards, etc. What can we do individually? And I think maybe this is one of the most important ones. We can challenge our friends, family, and colleagues who denigrate lesbians and gay men through jokes and harassment. We can openly support lesbians and gays in their struggle for human rights, and we can and should analyze our own behavior about homosexuality in order to correct our own discriminatory actions, no matter how subtle they are. It is the responsibility of citizens and leaders in the state to challenge and ultimately stop this discrimination and harassment. We live in a diverse society. Lesbians and gay men contribute to this diversity and deserve equal rights as all other citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. You mentioned the visibility of gay and lesbian persons serving on state boards. One of the things that's been suggested to us in some other cities is that a good thing to have happen in the state of Minnesota would be if there were some sort of council on gay and lesbian persons in the same way as there are minority councils, like mm-hmm. the Hispanic Council or Pan-Asian Council or something like that. What would be your opinion of something like that, if the state were actually to establish an office to deal with issues concerning gay and lesbian persons?
You mean establishing a board? Oh, I mean, I would support that and think that it makes a lot of sense. Again, as you pointed out, like other groups who do need to push for representation to gain equity and equality.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Sure. At the end of the hearing, could I have the poster back?
Oh, you certainly can. We'll pass it around. It's going around, and then just come and get it. Pierce, how many more people do we have to testify? 16 altogether? Okay. Luis Rose.
My name is Louis A. Rose. I'm a practical nursing student at St. Cloud Technical College. I'm also a certified nursing assistant with 3 years' experience of being a direct care provider for people with terminal last stage AIDS, both in Oregon, where I lived prior to moving here 2 years ago, and both here in rural Minnesota and St. Cloud. I've also been this past year an educator in AIDS-related issues for the rural Minnesota school system, last year speaking at over a dozen rural high schools and community colleges, St. Cloud State University social work campus seminars that offer CEUs. I also function all three of the following. I am a client, a volunteer, and the client's representative of the Regional Committee of the Central Minnesota AIDS Project. I'm a person with HIV virus. I have been HIV positive asymptomatic for approximately 3 years, and yes, I am gay. I recently encountered some problems in the nursing program. I made a public statement. I felt that I was forced to come out and be public about it. I was told that in order to get into the nursing program that I would have to take a physical, and it would have to be a thorough one. And so when I was confronted with this, I felt that it would be in my best interest to just come right out and tell these people that I was HIV positive. I felt that there was enough people backing me up, including people on the state epidemiology department who have spoken on my behalf, saying there's absolutely no reason why I cannot become a licensed practical nurse. When people were asked at both the Veterans Administration and St. Cloud Hospital, what do you think about an individual coming to do their clinicals here who is HIV positive, they were told, they told me through another individual who is a rehabilitation counselor with the DRS that no, I could not attend clinicals. This is specifically what she told me. I had to call an organization in the cities called ACT UP, and they got some gears moving for me, and within 2 weeks I was accepted into the clinicals. I'm currently facing that, and so I'm preparing to go into the clinicals. I'm weary, and I'm feeling apprehensive about it because these people had originally said no, and I'm wondering what kind of discrimination I'm going to encounter. Also, since I did make a public statement in that period of time, I have received considerable amounts of discrimination from people who are uneducated and really don't know any better in this community about people with AIDS and exactly how the virus is transmitted. But then again, from where I was living at, I think that has been kept to a minimum. I have had experiences of some homophobic attacks that took place recently between my home and St. Cloud Hospital, where there was some whistling, and these people were minors. And in a situation of that nature, I really don't know what to do. And if I'm attacked by a minor, I really don't know how I'm going to act. because then I've been told by other people that I could be liable regardless of the situation. So I feel that there should be more education started primarily in secondary schools for the education of the prevention of homophobia. This is something that starts as peer pressure with people in junior high school, and in order to be cool, they use the word faggot, and I think a lot of them don't even know what it means, and they don't even realize what they're doing or what they're saying. And when I did turn and confront these individuals, and I said, are you trying to start something, they immediately shrunk, and they immediately moved away from me. And these were bigger kids than me. They were 6 feet tall, 17 years old probably. And I know that if it came to physical confrontation, I couldn't have handled it. But I think what I saw there was, you know, they're saying, well, like, we didn't know what we were doing. And so I think there's education required on the part of the people here within this community. Also, legislation should be clarified for people that are discriminated against with AIDS, because I'm told that I need to buy half a stationery store and document things and buy 20 cassette recorders if I'm going to prove that I've been discriminated against as a person with HIV. I think that some of the standards and some of the requirements to prove discrimination should be eased. And I think in some situations it's kind of obvious when people are being discriminated against, and it makes it very difficult and stressful for an individual with HIV and or AIDS to prove this type of situation. And I'd also like to advocate, since this is going to the governor and you are the governor's commission, that part of the lottery proceeds go to fund and provide education regarding homophobia, as well as a separate and a related fund for the care and treatment of people with AIDS. I think that there is plenty being done now for the prevention and the halt of the virus within the state, and sure, there's not being enough, and there is a lot of funds being cut, but I think a lot of people have neglected to look at the aspect of the direct care and treatment of the people, not only that are infected with the AIDS virus, but the people who are carrying it, who are asymptomatic, many who don't know it. If we are able to provide services and counseling and the appropriate type of setup for these people, we're going to stop them from spreading the virus, because these are the people that are spreading the virus. And I have seen it happen right here in St. Cloud. I have seen people alienated and go out and have indiscriminate sex with other people, and I know these people are carrying the virus, and so I have seen it happen. I think that there needs to be greater emphasis placed on people receiving some kind of services, and where's that money going to come from? Well, we just started the lottery. I think that'd be a good place to start. And I think that wraps it up for what I have to say. Any questions?
Thank you. Yes, I have one. In testimony that we've heard in other cities, I'm particularly interested in the AIDS education issue, primarily because of my own background working in high school. And one of the things that we have heard in cities around the state is that the funding for any kind of AIDS education or AIDS prevention is definitely slanted toward the metro area, and that outlying areas are neglected. And I'd like to know what your perception of that is. Do you think it's true that an area like this, for instance, is seriously denied funding for AIDS education and prevention, and that the bulk of the money is really going to the Twin Cities or to the metro area, and they're getting it all?
Well, I don't think it's too unfair, but I think it's disproportionate, yes. I think that there is a greater need here in this area than what we have been getting. And the other thing that you can say with that is that you have a lot of people with AIDS and people with HIV who live in various large metropolitan centers around the country that when they get sick, they want to come home. Where do they go? They go to Hibbing, they go to St. Cloud, they go to Brainerd. This is where these people were born and raised. They want to come home. And so why isn't that funding in this community? Why is that funding in the community that they're living in, that they're trying to leave and they're trying to get out of? And so I think it's kind of important that we try to focus on the rural area and give it just as much attention as the cities.
I would also like to know what the reaction has been when you've gone to speak to high schools about the AIDS issue. Have you been positively received? Have you been jeered?
I have been overwhelmingly positively received. There is a rotten apple in every barrel, and I usually sometimes try to focus my attention on that one particular individual who I see sitting there smirking and whispering to his friend wearing the leather jacket, the jock macho typical image. And And so I'm understanding that that is going to happen, but overwhelmingly I have been well received, and the people really want to ask a lot of questions, and I think it's been beneficial for the people here in rural Minnesota. And you know I've heard a lot of negative things tonight about homophobia, and I think I'm the first person to really get up and start talking about AIDS discrimination, but I would like to point out the positive aspects of this area, and I think that compared to where I was living at in Oregon and what I've seen in my travels throughout life, that Minnesota is at the top of the heap as far as AIDS and gay discrimination, you know, but that doesn't mean that we can't go the extra mile and get right up at the very top.
Have you tried, for instance, to speak in high school and been denied access or been told ever that it's fine if you give a talk in this town, but you're not going to do it at school? Have you had that kind of experience at all?
Well, no. These talks were scheduled either through the Central Minnesota AIDS Project, and I spoke as a volunteer, or else they came through the spiritual care department of St. Cloud Hospital, and I went out and spoke. And so it was by invitation only, you know, so it was not like I said, hello, here I am, I want to come and speak. So I was well received at all of the places for that reason.
Other questions? Any other questions? Thank you very, very much. Jeff Krieger.
Hi, my name is Jeff Krueger, and I'm a citizen of the city of St. Joseph. I'm here today to tell you about something that happened this past summer. On July 22nd, my partner was out cutting the grass. He was verbally attacked by our neighbor, the councilman, Donald Reber. He's a councilman for the city of St. Joseph. I went outside to offer support to my partner. And some of the words that we were called were faggots, queers, cocksuckers. He also made the comment that he hopes that we would die by bleeding through the ass. His son at that time made a terroristic threat against me. They continuously tried to bait us out off our property into fighting them, and we would not leave our property. His son then said that he would catch me on the street and that they would have to pick up the pieces and stick them in a black plastic bag. At this time, everything quieted down and went in the house. I was able to obtain a restraining order against his son, but the paperwork got lost. The restraining order went through, but the paperwork for the terroristic threat kind of got shuffled around. The city of St. Joseph's, the attorney for the city of St. Joseph is also the councilman's attorney, so it was then presented to the Stearns County attorney, who said that there was no weapon involved and that he was probably just blowing out steam, so there's nothing he could do. The city of St. Cloud city attorney enough information. I then offered to give him more information, and he said he would not accept anything that was in a police report. This is not the first time that they have harassed us. They have called us faggots a couple other times. They have made comments about our sexual life. And if it was not for working with the Gay and Lesbian Community Action Council and Patty Abbott, I think that we would have just tried to avoid it. This and probably hid in our house and hope not to have run into them. There's something that I have found out about myself that going through the legal process and coming to speak about this in front of you and telling people about this has made me stronger and has decreased my own homophobia. I have not felt a great amount of assistance from the legal areas or the legal areas in the city, the city attorney and the police. It was suggested that we go to the police and explain our situation to them and also admitting to them that we are a gay couple living in St. Joseph. We chose not to because we could not trust the reaction. The chief of police of the city of St. Joseph had admitted to us that they tread lightly where Councilman Reber is concerned. And so we had decided that if we were asked directly, we would not deny our sexuality, but then we would not also bring it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Yes.
When you approached the city attorney of St. Cloud, and they told you there wasn't enough information.
Correct.
They weren't. they wouldn't follow through or try to get more documentation from you or dates and cite the incident?
Correct.
They weren't willing to do anything about that?
No, I said I have about 10 pages of paperwork on file that went with the restraining order at the courthouse here in town. I told him that. He said he was not going to go down and look it up. He also said that if it didn't come into the police report, he didn't want it.
Do you own your property?
My partner does. It's in his name, yes.
Okay. But so it's not just rental property?
No, we own it.
Is this person still a council person?
Yes, he is. He's running for re-election.
I'm curious about what his age is and the age of his son.
I'm not exactly sure. I think his age is around 60, 62. His son is maybe 25.
So. This is a function of the Good Old Boys Network, huh?
Pardon?
The Good Old Boys Network.
Yes.
Any other questions?
Do you get any support in your community? This is an awful story. How do you survive there?
Like I said, with the Gay and Lesbian Community Action Council in Minneapolis and Patty Abbott, she's extremely supportive. I would talk with her almost every day. I also spoke with Julie Andrzejewski at one point and also Marianne Daniels. They were real willing to listen. So
that's your lifeline, but nothing there in St. Joseph?
No, nothing in St. Joseph. It's a really small town, really.
Small town.
Any other
people in St. Joseph? Are other people in St. Joseph aware of this episode and what's happened to you?
When we went to the police, we didn't mention what the derogatory remarks were. All we said is that derogatory remarks were made. When I went to file the restraining order, then I listed the derogatory remarks, what was said and what happened. You know, like I said, we weren't going to go directly to the St. Joe police and just state that we were gay and this is what was happening unless we were directly asked.
But do neighbors know about this and other people in St. Joseph?
No.
I'm just appalled that a person who is being running, who's in public office and running for re-election for public office engages in this kind of behavior. People really ought to know who it is that they're voting for.
I spoke with, I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Ullman. Maybe about a year ago, because we were being harassed, and I asked him about it, and he's good friends with Donald Reber, and he said that would be best that he not get involved because it would just cause more animosity. So. And, you know, I've spoken with, Minnesota Civil Liberties Union. They said they can't help me. They passed this on to Human Service, Department of Human Services. I talked to them. They said gays and lesbians don't have rights in the state. So there wasn't much that they could do.
Because the thing that concerns me is not necessarily the gay and lesbian part of it, but just the pure harassment. I mean, there are laws against harassment, period.
Right.
You know, that's the part that really bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
That this person, as Alan says, this person is running for office and harassing.
Right.
And if no one knows, and I know it's like between a rock and a hard place, you know, but.
Right. My partner and I have decided that we would draft up a letter, have an attorney look at it, send it to the mayor of the city, the city attorney, also St. Cloud Times, and see what happens from there about this man's conduct.
If you do that, would you send us a copy as well, please?
Yes,
okay,
I will.
Thank you. Just for clarification, for those in the audience who don't know this, Chapter 363, which is the human rights law in the state of Minnesota, does not protect people on the basis of sexual orientation. If you live in a community where the community has already passed such a law, such as in Minneapolis or St. Paul, then you have some protection. But statewide, sexual orientation is not included in the Human Rights Act. Are there any other questions, Alan?
But this was, especially with the action of the son.
Yes.
This certainly sounded to me like a terroristic threat. And you don't have to have a weapon to make a terroristic threat.
That's right.
And this was a threat of violence, a threat that he was going to kill you. You were going to be found in a plastic bag. I mean, that is against the law in the
Absolutely.
State of Minnesota.
Absolutely.
people, I work with people in the Ramsey County Workhouse who are doing time for a whole lot less than what you've just been put through.
Apparently not here.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for telling us this. And if you do have anything written later, please send us a copy.
Thank you.
Pardon? Number 13? Okay. I do want to say that generally we take a break during these hearings, but since our time is limited here in terms of vacating the room, I'm not going to do that tonight. Cindy Anderson?
Hi, my name is Cindy Anderson, and I'm a lesbian who lives here in St. Cloud. I have quite a number of things to talk about. First of which regards life insurance. I'm in a partnership with a person who's in the audience, and we took out life insurance policies because we wanted to protect each other, you know. And we were not able to get our names put down as beneficiaries on these life insurance policies. And that's just one of the, the insurance company said the only way that they would allow us to do it is if we put down, if we put our beneficiaries as this, as our estate. You're not allowed to have each other as our beneficiaries. Another issue is harassing phone calls that we have received. We have personally received a number of harassing phone calls. Well, at first they started out as just heavy breathing type phone calls, and then they kind of have regressed to threats, again, threats of rape. That's what I would sum them up as. We don't know who's making them. It's a person who keeps making them. It kind of goes in cycles. The person will stop, and then it'll start up again. We had a friend of ours who also received threatening phone calls. These phone calls were the nature of person saying, I want to kill you, I want to fry your ass, you're just a butt fucker, et cetera, et cetera. This person was also, he's also gay. He's moved out of the area now. Another incident occurred at St. Cloud State regarding our Gay and Lesbian Awareness Day that Lambda put on in 1989. This regarded defacing of our posters announcing this day, and also two Christian groups on campus organizing a non-GLAD day. And they purposely put their posters over ours, and I would say that they were the ones who defaced our posters. Another incident is regarding, I'm the one who was sexually harassed up at St. Cloud State, and I also feel that my case at St. Cloud State was trivialized because of my sexual orientation. Another incident occurred regarding the ACT UP protest in Mora in 1989. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that. ACT UP organized protest to protest a minister getting up before a play production regarding AIDS education and denouncing it because it seemed to endorse gay and lesbian lifestyle. And the repercussions of this were to have all AIDS education in Mora postponed until they wanted to relook at this. Anyway, at the protest, my partner and I arrived early, and when we got there, there was a number of, I would say, 15 to 20 youths from the age of 12 to 14 running around with baseball bats and lead pipes at this protest. We were verbally accosted the entire time we were there. There was even a man who, I don't know if any of you saw the newspapers, who had a surgical mask on and rubber gloves, and he made a comment to the newspapers saying that some of those people appeared to have AIDS and that he didn't want to catch it because he thought that this was an airborne disease. These are just a brief summary of some things that have actually happened to me directly. I can I could go on down the list. I mean, this town is, in this area, is just so homophobic. And it's, I'm just frightened. I mean, I just have to say it. I'm frightened to live in this town. And I have to because I'm finishing my education here. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Questions? Any questions at all? Thank you very much. Jeff Ringer.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Ringer. I'm an assistant professor at St. Cloud State University. I'm one of the advisors to the Gay and Lesbian Association on campus, known as LAMBDA, part of the Lesbian and Gay Bisexual Resource Center on campus. I'm also the one of the co-chairs of the Gay and Lesbian Faculty Association on campus. I'm the chair of the board of directors of the Central Minnesota AIDS Project, and I'm also a chair of a caucus of Gay and Lesbian Concerns of a National Professional Association. Before I begin, I'd like to say, as I was sitting in the back room, I wanted to wait towards the end to testify to give everyone else a chance to talk. And as I was sitting there, I kept remembering more things, and more things, and more things. And someone else said, oh yeah, don't forget about this. And someone else said, oh yeah, don't forget about this. And someone's passing more information down the line. 3 years ago, when we had the testimony here on regular harassment, I asked a lot of the students from the Gay and Lesbian Association to come here and testify, and many of them were afraid to testify, so I interviewed them and took testimony for them. And all I had to do was ask someone once for an instance, and they gave me 5 or 6. So what you need to know is that every gay or lesbian person in Minnesota has lots of stories to tell, and this is only scratching the surface. What I'm going to do is I'm going to run down a brief list of some of the things that I have to tell you. I have prepared testimony that I will give to you later. I have pictures, I have posters, and I have an audio tape that we received 2 to 3 weeks ago from someone calling our association and saying, why don't you faggots get off campus? And I'll make a recording of that for you so that you can take it with you. Our signs have been defaced, and as the students have said, they write fag and homo on them. We put posters up on campus, and on the way back around campus, they're already gone on the same evening. We have found comics denigrating gay men posted on bulletin boards. Someone has handwritten by hand, and we will give you copies of those, too. I have made prepared booklets for my classes. A student came to one of my classes with the word homo written on the book in one of my classes. I have a photocopy of that. I will give you that. A lesbian student has been raped on campus and told that all she needed was a good fuck by a man, and that's all to take care of her. She reported to the police, and luckily the policeman was somewhat supportive, but the people at the hospital were not supportive, and I have that in the testimony that you'll receive. A gay man has been beaten up on campus in the residence halls and was afraid to tell anyone about it, and it was fairly well hushed up. Residence hall advisors are afraid to come out on campus. There's a dorm director who's afraid to come out on campus because of what might happen. There are all kinds of students who are out in Minneapolis and St. Paul. We see them there when we go to the gay bars, when we see them there when we go to parades, but when we come back home to St. Cloud, they see us on campus and they ignore us. They don't want to be out on campus. They're very much afraid to be out on St. Cloud's campus. On campus, getting to St. Cloud State University, last year we hired a new assistant vice president, and the Gay and Lesbian Faculty Association went to the interviews to ask questions about this candidate and ask questions about their views towards gays and lesbians. And one of the members of the search committee was a faculty member was over.
Depends upon the nature of what caused it, you know, how it occurred.
Well, why don't you want to it's probably not an answer we can get adequately here to what extent we are covered and under what circumstances.
Is it fair to assume that if it was an accident or an act of God or something like that, lightning strikes tomorrow, it's going to be covered, but if it's a piece of equipment that fails simply because it was a defective piece of equipment, we're stuck and we have to go after the equipment manufacturer or something like that.
That's accurate. And again, I was just making sure that Councilman Meyer wasn't thinking we bought some utilities by actually insurance that protects against the variances in the in nature and the flows that come down the river to try to level that up. That's very expensive, and we don't have that.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, let's get a report back on that just to feel comfortable in what exactly we are covered on. There is a motion here on the floor.
To introduce the resolution, waiving reading.
I think you already did that, didn't you?
For approval.
Go ahead, do it again.
Second.
I think you already did. But anyway, any further discussion on this? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. opposed? Okay. Number 14 is appeal of a decision of the Zoning Board of Appeals on a request from Thomas Sievert for a variance from Article 11.